Bishop Alban's story. The author of the following article lived on Guadalcanal during those historic days, which saw the seizure of the island by the Japanese and its dramatic recovery by the Americans. Right Reverend Bishop Jean-Marie Aubin, SM, Vicar Apostolic of the South Solomon Islands, made his headquarters at Visale Station, Guadalcanal, and kept a diary during a period which has won an imperishable page in United States history. Before the war, Visale was a big station with flourishing schools, staffed by two priests, two lay brothers, and five European sisters. One of the sisters was in charge of the novitiate of the native sisters, and one of the brothers of the printing press of the mission. In the centre was the Cathedral of the Sacred Heart. On July 2, 1942, the Japanese made their first visit. A few weeks later, at the station at Visale, nothing was left but ruins. Early in August, when bombers began to fly overhead, the mission staff fled to the bush and remained there for 3 weeks, living in small huts. Every day, however, Bishop Albin returned to his residence to attend to his duties. Frequently, when going or returning to the bush, Bishop Albin and his aides would be compelled to stop and hide themselves in the scrub to escape the patrol planes. Conditions became worse when the Japanese, retreating before the advancing Americans, flooded by the station in ever-increasing numbers, looting everything in sight. Finally, the mission staff were obliged to flee to Tangarare. Bishop Albin, who had taken sick, being carried in a litter. In the concise style of a diary, Bishop Albin vividly pictures those tragic weeks. The drama opens with the arrival on July 2 of a big Japanese schooner. Four armed men came ashore to inspect the station. They requisitioned a pig and some fowl. Next morning, the schooner left. That was on July 3, when the diary begins. Now we begin Bishop Albin's diary. At lunchtime, a Japanese officer of high rank, accompanied by his orderly, arrived at the station. He came by road from Chapuru village, which is situated near Cape Esperance, about 2 miles from Visale. That day, a Japanese post was established in that village. The officer, whose name was Ishimoto, presented a written questionnaire to the bishop in which had to be furnished particulars regarding the missionaries of the whole vicariate, their names, age, nationality, stations where they were resided. These were furnished. Then followed questions. How many whites in the islands before the Japanese occupation? To this, we replied that we depended for our information on the Blue Book. Then, how many whites are there now? Our answer was, we do not know. Naturally enough, for we knew that many had been evacuated. The document was signed by the bishop and Father McMahon, procurator of the mission. To further questions, is there a district officer on this island? We were able to reply orally and truthfully, we do not know. It was after the questioning that I took the decision to have no official relations with the Japs, except in the presence of the three priests, Fathers Brueggemans, who's a Hollander, McMahon, a Canadian, and Scanlon, New Zealander. For being French and knowing the unhappy state of France, I feared being accused of cooperation with the enemy by those who would find it strange that all the Catholic missionaries remained at their posts by order of their bishop. Afterwards, Ishimoto inspected all the buildings of the station, more than 20. Presbytery, brother's house, sister's quarters, classrooms, dormitories, stores, hospital, printing press, cathedral, and sacristy. And about 300 yards from the station, the bishop's residence and the novitiate of the native sisters. When he presented himself at the novitiate of the native sisters, the novices and postulants were in the classrooms. In their presence, Ishimoto went to the blackboard and wrote in English this sentence, "Out of sight, out of mind. You must obey the Japanese authorities." And he asked the sister mistress of novices, a Canadian, to translate it to them, and continued his visitation. After a thorough inspection of the whole station, he ordered my pro-vicar, the Reverend Father Brueggemans, to follow him to Chiparu, and from there by boat to Lunga. Immediately I lodged a strong protest, and I got this answer. "I had the order to take you all to Lunga. I'm taking only one." And he went away with Father Brueggemans and the orderly. About 1 hour after their departure, a Japanese schooner coming from Chaparu anchored in the bay, and Ishimoto came ashore with a party of soldiers. He asked for the immediate delivery of our three radios, of 12 Chinese boxes full of trade articles left in our care at the station by one of the Chinese before his departure, and for the delivery of chairs of the dining room and veranda. When they were loading those things, some of the crew went to the sisters' quarters, entered their house, and started to loot. I was at the time with Ishimoto on the beach. As soon as I saw the men at the sisters, I left him and rushed hurriedly to them. "Get outside of the house at once," I said to the men who were inside. At the same time, the orderly of Ishimoto arrived and ordered them out. One came out with 5 or 6 packets of altar candles in his hand, another with a basket full of eggs. "Give me that," I said to them, and I took from them what they had taken and gave it back to the sisters. When Ishimoto arrived on the spot, I protested strongly against the conduct of his men. He told me that he would punish them on their arrival at Lunga. Some of the men, I was told by the sisters, had already stolen linen and hidden it under their clothes. They would be searched on their arrival at Lunga, and the linen sent back, which was done a few days later. In the previous visit on July 3, I had written a letter to the chief commander at Lunga, asking for freedom of action for myself and all the missionaries of the vicariate. I now asked for the answer. Ishimoto had only an oral reply. Liberty to visit the villages was refused. I insisted on being allowed to answer calls to the sick. Again, no. We were to be as prisoners on our own station of Vasale. Ishimoto then demanded my personal cooperation in making his orders known to the natives of the whole island of Guadalcanal. I refused, and told him that even under the British rule, we were not agents of administration, and each island was ruled directly by a district officer who has his own representatives in each district and village. Our role was that of ministers of religion, and in that role, our authority did not extend beyond the Catholics. 5 July. Ishimoto, accompanied by a Japanese doctor and a party of soldiers, came back to Vasale with Father Brueggemans. He asked me for the immediate delivery of the mission boat Santa Ana with all its fuel, and also the delivery of our refrigerator, binoculars, farming implements, shotguns, and cartridges. Then Ishimoto composed what he called Notice Number 1 and Order Number 1, and he had it posted up at the main door of the presbytery. It read as follows. Notice number 1. All the inhabitants of this island must be ordered by Japanese government to cooperate for Japan. Any inhabitant against it should be severely punished by Japanese martial law. Order number 2. Men only over 14 years and less than 50 years have to work for Japanese troops at some places in this island. After a month's labour, they will be given the identity as a civilian of this island. During work, the Japanese troops they will be supplied During work for Japanese troops, they will be supplied with houses, meals, tobacco, etc. Signed, Chief Commander Ishimoto. Before going away that day, he told me of his intention to come back soon, to remain at the station, and to have there a recruiting bureau. I objected to it, telling him that his abiding amongst us will expose our station to the bombardment of the Allies as a military base. He considered the matter and told me that he would refer it to the Commander-in-Chief at Lunga, and I heard no more about it. Father Brueggemans reported on his 3 days as prisoner at Lunga. He did not know why he had been taken, as the only questions he had been asked were substantially the same as those asked previously at Vasale, and he'd given the same replies. He was treated respectfully and confined to a house inhabited by officers and a doctor who he thought was a German. But he found the food poor and insufficient, a little rice and water. During these visits, the soldiers from the post at Chaparu and sailors from the schooners had stolen and requisitioned a good number of things from the station. Watch, clothing, pig, fowls, etc. I asked from Ishimoto some sort of document in Japanese to protect us against these looters. He promised one, but did not give it. 10 July. Ishimoto called at Vasale on his way to Cape Hunter, where he was going to establish a post at Veru. He asked for one of our dinghies and gave information that on 12 July, on his return, he would take about 60 men. 12 July. Not long after the late Mass, it was Sunday, the boat of Ishimoto was sighted, and about 9 a.m. anchored at Vasale. Ishimoto came ashore with a party of soldiers, 66 men, and the neighbouring villagers were taken aboard. On the insistence of Father Scanlon, we again asked Ishimoto for permission to visit our villagers, and above all, to visit these workers who would be in the danger zone at Lunga. We asked for a document of safe conduct. He seemed agreeable and wrote out 2 copies in Japanese, one for Lunga and one for us. On our copy, he commenced to write out the English translation. It commenced, "Father is cooperating with the Japanese forces." End of quote. I was looking over his shoulders, and I drew Father Scanlon's attention to it immediately. We stopped Ishimoto and told him that a safe conduct under such terms was unacceptable. After a long discussion on the meaning of cooperation, he tore up the papers and said he would speak to the authorities at Lunga about our demand, but I heard nothing further about it. 14 July. 2 Japanese officers, accompanied by armed men, came by boat and requisitioned from our stores axes, lanterns, etc. 19 July, Sunday. After the late Mass, 5 soldiers of the post at Chaparu came hurriedly to the station and accused us of having fired at a Japanese plane passing over Vasale. We all denied the fact, the natives also. 2 or 3 times about this time, the Japanese came from their post at Chaparu, saying that they could hear wireless transmitters operating from somewhere close at hand and asking us about them. We replied that as they had taken away all our wireless sets, we could tell nothing about it, and so we were able to avoid giving them any suspicion that there were, at the time, a British post not far from Vasale. 3 August. For the preceding 2 days, the men of the district working at Lunga had been coming back in small bands, fleeing in secret through the bush. The last of them arrived on this date after having received a secret message to get out of Lunga quickly. All were in extremely low spirits and said, "It is very bad there. We were very frightened, impossible to sleep and eat, but God looked after us. None has been injured in the American bombardments." End of quote. Some also said that some of the Japanese would also run away if they could. 7 August. About 5:30 a.m., squadrons of American planes began to fly over Vasale in the direction of Tulagi and Lunga. Many people at the station that morning. It was the first Friday of the month, and many had come to attend Holy Mass and Holy Communion, and they were waiting outside the church with our school children, all looking at the planes. It was really a fine show. Very likely the Japanese post at Chaparu shot at the planes passing over it. Immediately, some of the American planes turned back, flew over the station behind the cathedral and machine gunned. All ran away into the bush, children, fathers, sisters and natives. It was a miracle that nobody was killed or injured. In the meantime, I was saying Mass in my private chapel adjacent to my residence. During the whole Mass, many planes flew very low over the station and my house. After Mass, there was a lull. So before going to the bush for a shelter, I decided to walk to the station in order to take a piece of bread. I walked along the road to the presbytery. As soon as I arrived on the veranda, a plane, flying very low, came suddenly and machine-gunned the presbytery. The bullets passed very near to me. When the plane was over the bay, I ran as fast as I could towards the bush. I had hardly made 50 yards when another plane, passing behind the cathedral, arrived over me. It was very low. I threw myself on the ground and heard the bullets falling near me, and a second after, a bomb was dropped near the boys' dormitory, a building 100 feet long. It was all destroyed, and all the buildings of the station. Even my residence and the novitiate suffered very much from the blast. By a special protection, I was not injured. I ran along the road to take shelter in the bush. For 3 weeks, all the personnel of the mission remained in the bush, not far from Vasale, living in small huts. Every day, from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m., I spent my time at my residence doing some work. Very often, too, the sisters, accompanied by people of the nearby villages, came to the station to secure personal effects and get foodstuff from our stores. Many a time, when coming back to the station or going back to the bush, we were obliged to stop and hide ourselves in the scrub, not to be seen by the patrol planes or by the Japanese planes, fearing to be taken for Japanese by the Americans or for the Americans by the Japs. Cooking in the bush at a certain period was quite a problem, as the natives were told officially that wherever smoke should be seen, the United States would fire at the place. We managed the best we could. 14 August. After the capture of Lunga by the USA Marine Corps, the Japs, driven back, were spreading into the bush and flying along the coast towards Vasale. Very likely, some of them reached the post of Chaparu. In fact, on 14 August, a party of Japs came to the station, broke into the presbytery and the brothers' and the sisters' houses and our stores, and they started looting. That day, they did not go to the bishop's residence nor to the novitiate of the native sisters. On the 15th of August, after Mass in the bush for the people, I walked down to my residence with some men. I packed up some personal effects and a great part of the mission archives to be taken to the bush and hidden. 29 to 31 August. At the end of August, I had a very bad attack of dysentery. On the 29th, I decided to return to Vasale. Two of the sisters came to nurse me and remained 2 days and two nights at the novitiate of the native sisters with me. On the afternoon of the 30th, a Jap plane was shot down in the bay of Vasale. The pilot came ashore close to where I was in bed. He was wounded and bleeding. So the sisters bound him up, and the natives put him on the road to Chaparu. He repaid our kindness by next day sending back his compatriots to loot my residence, which so far had not been touched, and the novitiate of the native sisters, where I was ill in bed and from where I was removed about 11 a.m., just before the arrival of the Japs. From there, the Japs went to the native gardens, where we had hidden 10 or 11 bags of rice. They discovered the rice and told the people they would come back for it in the afternoon. They did come back a few hours after and found that the natives had taken away two or three bags. At this point, there is a gap in the diary, a section of that diary I don't have. There appears to be only a sentence or two missing, and I believe the bishop is saying that the boys, while carrying the rice back to the hiding place in the bush, were intercepted by some Japanese troops, which ended up in one of the boys being shot. So now I'll resume the reading of the diary. One of the boys' names was Petero Sego. Very likely he tried to deceive the Japs. They shot at him. The next morning the body was found in the big grass. They obliged the other boys to carry the rice to Chaparu and kept them prisoners a part of the night. When we heard the news, very late at night in our bush retreat, we decided not to remain any longer in the Vasale district and to flee to our station at Tangarare, about 30 miles distant, where we hoped to be free of any contact with the Japanese. We took with us our bedding and some personal effects, only what we could carry, and before midnight our exodus started. From village to village, all we went, fathers, brothers, sisters, native sisters, with some of our boys and schoolgirls. Three or four faithful men carried me in a litter. On the 5th of September, we were all at Tangarare. We spent there nearly a month, but as the Japs were getting nearer day by day, we were obliged to send the sisters away from the station. Some went further down the coast, some in a bush village. It was when we were at Tangarare that we heard from the natives that the Maris brothers and two priests of Mary, and also the two fathers and the sisters of Ruavatu, had been taken prisoners by the Japs and released. Only at the end of September, we had the news of the terrible tragedy of Tasimboke, the murder of Father Inge Bering, Father Duhame, Sister Sylvia and Sister Odelia, and the flight of Sister Edme to the Gold Ridge to escape the Japs. On October 3rd, we got a message from Lunga informing us that on the next morning we should be rescued from Tangarare. On the 4th, we all left for Lunga except one father who remained at Tangarare. Before dark that day, three priests, two brothers and seven sisters were put aboard a transport going south. By special permission of General Vandergrift, I remained in the island. I came across to Malaita with 10 native sisters rescued from Tangarare. At the end of November and the beginning of December, 25 more missionaries were sent from Guadalcanal and Malaita, 7 priests, 6 brothers and 12 sisters. Before we left Tangarare, we heard from some natives coming back from the Vasale district that everything we'd hidden in the bush behind the station at Vasale and elsewhere had fallen into the hands of the Japs. And as the station itself, after our departure, had become a den of Japanese, all the buildings had been shelled from the sea and bombed from the air. So, of the station of Vasale, headquarters of our mission, nothing was left but ruins. Therefore, like the patriarch Job, we could say in truth, "The Lord, so it is done. Blessed be the taken away. As it has pleased the Lord, so it is done. Blessed be the name of the Lord."